स्पाइस रेडियो और रेडियो रमजम सुन रहे हैं। हम गपशप का प्रोग्राम है। हमारी घड़ियों में बाद दोपहर के 2:07 को चाहते हैं। अब से लेकर 3 बजे तक आपका हमारा साथ रहेगा हमारे आज के इस कार्यक्रम में, जिसका नाम बड़े प्यार से हमने गपशप रखा है, क्योंकि इसमें वो सभी बातें जो आज आपकी नजरों में अटकेंगी,
खटकेंगी
और दिल में समाएंगी,
उन सबको लेकर हम हाजिर हैं। ये बताते हुए कि बाहर खूबसूरत मौसम है, हल्के फुल्के बादल मंडरा रहे हैं, 10 डिग्री टेम्परेचर है और वीकेंड इज लुकिंग रियली ब्यूटिफुल। सो दिस इज रियल अप्रैल वेदर हमारे अपने मुल्क में, और लगता है कि ये पूरा महीना ऐसा ही रहेगा। सो इस महीने में देयर इज गोइंग टू बी 2 नगर कीर्तन, वन ऑन द 13th एंड वन ऑन द 20th। 13th विल बी इन वैंकूवर एंड द 20th विल बी इन सरी। सो tons ऑफ पीपल आर गोइंग टू बी देयर। I remember when we used to record the program in the 80s, people used to say 100,000 se upar log aaye the, and our total population used to be about 80,000.
Mm-hmm.
100,000 to ho jaate hain. And then, so we've got a habit of, you know, exaggerating everything. So when we started doing the Nagar Kirtan in Surrey, oh, 2.5 lakh to 3 lakh log the again. Total population of our community throughout British Columbia was about 350,000, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Last time, they did a Nagar Kirtan, 5 lakh to bhi zyada log aise, 500,000.
Yep.
Wow.
So now it's going to be 1 million log aise.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think at this point, the event isn't just for our community. Like, no. Everyone goes. I feel like it's always been like that. I remember we used to have a tent up and we used to give food out. And, like, there were so many gore there that would just come by and get some food and asking about it, what's happening. And I feel like it's nice to have that those kind of events, right?
For sure.
I think lots of people also don't realize how many people come out from outside the city just around to, you know, specifically for the event, because, you know, nothing maybe exists like that in their small town as to that scale.
It is the largest Nagar Kirtan in North America, in the world, actually.
Oh, wow.
Even in India, they don't have it like this.
Wow.
It's the largest here. Oh. So, yeah, 1 lakh ta kuch bhi nahi, 1 million honge. So, Om, you're most welcome in our program. So, we are going to be continuing with our topic.
Yes, today we're talking about racism and colorism within the South Asian communities.
Within the South Asian communities.
Yeah, so this was obviously inspired by another successful event that Sushma just put on, the 10th, I believe, anniversary for her Hands Against Racism event. So I actually want to ask you, how did you begin, you know, that event, and like, what is it rooted in?
Well, the root of, excuse me, that event is Holi, inspired by Holi. Because Holi is one festival in India, a country which is dogmatic as far as racism is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is Gora Kala and in between.
Yeah.
And cultures and religions and complexions all come into it. But Holi sort of depicts the uniqueness of human beings, and that we all are the same, you know. And I wanted to take that and sort of talk about racism, because our own lives, in one way or another, we have faced racism, either as a child or as a teenager or as a business person, person working, person emigrating here. So taking all that into consideration, I thought, you know, we should talk about how to end racism. I mean, I've lived on 4 continents and I have seen racism in each continent. So that's how we started on the 15th of January, 2015.
Nice.
And that was Martin Luther King. King's birthday.
Nice.
So we wanted to start it on that day because he was the epitome of, you know, anti-racism.
For sure.
And so this last month, we celebrated our 10th anniversary.
Yes.
Although when we talked to Gurpreet Ji, he said he's going to celebrate 10th next year.
Why?
Because 2015, 2025.
That's fair.
Yeah.
No, but it was a great event. We had the chief of Surrey, who gave a great conversation with him, as well as Attorney General and other great speeches. So I thought it was a fantastic event. And I really do like the idea you got from Holi, because when everyone's, you know, painted in colors, you can't see their skin complexion and what it is. Everyone's just one.
Yeah, or their religion.
Exactly, yeah.
Or what part of India they come from.
It unites that one human race, for sure, most definitely. And I think it's symbolic because there's all sorts of colors in the Holi as well. So that's
right.
Lovely. But yeah, no, I think it's a very important topic. And I think that there's a rise of racism against Indians even in this country as well that I'd love to tackle on another episode. But today I want specifically more to talk about how Indians themselves may be racist in certain ways or colorist in certain ways and not even know it, how it's very naturalized into some of our language, our interaction, the commodities that we buy. It's very systemic. And in many cases, unless you take time to look back at how normalized it is within our life, we won't be able to undo its impact.
So, aapki jaat kya hai?
Jaat. Huh. I need the definition.
So, what is you are... Your last name is Arora. So
yes.
What are you?
That's really funny. I have no idea. I've looked so deep into it and, you know, I've come to the understanding.
So that's the epitome of racism.
Exactly.
Me asking you, ki aapki jaat kya hai?
Yeah.
Ya aapki zaat kya hai?
Mm-hmm.
And asking her, what is your jaat? You don't know.
Yeah.
Which is very good. Which is very good.
Yeah.
Because in India, the racism also is born out of the division of class and caste system.
Caste system, for sure.
But the caste system wasn't meant to be the way it is.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, it was meant to be, so if you are a teacher, you are a Brahmin.
Yeah.
If you are a warrior, you are Kshatriya.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a merchant, you are a Vaishya.
Yeah.
So, and if you cannot be any of these three and you are a helper, then you are Shudra.
Yeah.
But it didn't mean that the Shudra was an untouchable.
Yes.
It was all division of labor.
Yes. And I think it's the misinterpretation of those caste systems by both the Mughal conquest and the British conquest of India that really is one of the biggest roots of where our racist tendencies come from.
The British brought the class system.
Exactly.
100%.
Mm-hmm.
And polished our caste system and made it into a unique system that we still... To date, we follow that.
Exactly.
And to date, in India, everyone, a man calls another man sir, and a woman calls another woman ma'am.
Yeah, for sure.
We don't have our own, you know, ways of addressing each other.
Yeah, you're totally right. Pardon?
Bothers?
Yes, no, it bothers me as well. And so you're right. So, like, I think that with the Mughal state, they reintroduced these strict divisions to casteless groups to systemize the control. And then when the British came in, they codified it into law. So it became a lawful thing. They wanted to do this to give certain members of castes more power so that they can hold control over the lower castes.
Mm-hmm.
So there were people of higher castes who were accepting their role in white supremacy as long as it meant that they weren't the lowest rung of the social hierarchy. And this actually created colorism because often then these higher caste jobs may have been professional jobs or businessman jobs, whereas lower caste jobs may have been laborious work outside. And obviously, if you were outside more often, you're more likely to have maybe melanin in you. And these colorist divisions start to grow and create and then are codified already into law. And you slowly realize that because of this division, a lot of the people who are having more wealth within India were higher caste people who happened to be lighter skinned people.
Mm.
So people, I think, fail to realize that though the caste system has a lot of issues, I would say inherently to some degree, it was its misinterpretation that realistically actually created that colorism and racism. And now it's extremely, extremely deep within our culture. So
yeah, I think it's in our DNA now.
It's definitely...
And what's interesting is like, because I have a lot of friends that aren't brown, right? And so I'll say something, they're like, whoa, like that's kind of racist. And I'm like, whoa. That is kind of racist. And it's just like, that's just how my grandparents talk. That's how my dad talks, right? So it's like, now I have to think, okay, you know, like if I know other brown girls who are like, oh, you know, I can't marry a black guy. I can't marry a Muslim. I can't do this, right? Like I get it, but that's also kind of racist, right?
For
like,
sure.
Discriminating
someone.
You had
an interesting acronym to talk
well,
about.
Well, yeah, I was at a wedding last year, and I was sitting, and this auntie beside me, and she said, oh, are you getting, you know, do you have a girlfriend? And I said, I do actually have a girlfriend, yeah. And she's like, oh, you're going to get married? And I was like, oh, it's a process. When it occurs, we'll get there when we get there. And she goes, oh, great, as long as they're not BMW. And I sat there like, I don't understand what that
so
even
means.
They
don't means. Have BMW, don't marry them.
Yeah,
marry
and I was
them
like,
if they have a car.
Yeah, I was like, okay, that's interesting. But I sat there for a second and they clarified by saying black, Muslim, or white.
Black, Muslim, or white. White.
And to me, I thought I was just shocked at how normalized that this type of concept was amongst these communities even here, that they have acronyms. You know, they must be throwing this acronym, you know, amongst other Indian parents or whoever, and it's a normal thing for them. And I was just shocked, and I looked, you know, a little bit like, this was totally not a right thing to say. All I responded with was just, hey, my mother has raised me to be able to be with anyone as long as they're a good person. And you could see them instantly backtrack when someone does not accept or agree with their bigotry, because it's very normal to just, you know, turn a side eye to it. A lot of time when we see other people, especially in our own cultures, even if they, you might think that their intention is not as bad, we just kind of turn a blind eye to them saying things that are very, very incorrect. And you're totally right about how normalized it is. I don't think that anyone in my family is necessarily racist by any means or has any intention. But growing up my whole life, I always heard whenever I look good, oh, gora lag raha tu, bahut gora lag raha hai. Tu aaj kala lag raha hai, kala kalutta lag raha hai. And it's like, you know, to me, growing up, I started, you know, doing the direct translation, being someone who lives in Canada and speaks English. I always knew gora also means white, and then kala also means black. So why is it that every single time I look good, I'm being called white? And every single time I'm looking bad, I'm called black. And as a kid, I actually played into this. I'm a light-skinned Indian. I have that privilege of
why are you calling it a privilege?
Well, I know it's a privilege because everywhere I saw, I wanted to be a Bollywood actor until I was 13, and everything I saw promoted fair-skinned Indians. So automatically within my own belief, I was like, I have a good chance at, I look like, you know, all the celebrities. I look like who is being promoted. You know, someone who's darker skinned is not being promoted. It wasn't only until 5 or 6 years ago that India stopped promoting fairness creams as a
That's
form
right.
of beauty.
Yes.
You know, then and it created a lot of negativity. People, there were young girls in India who were ashamed of having darker skin. They were going and getting themselves bleached. They were going and doing whatever they could in superstitious manners to maybe hope that they would become white over time. And that was being promoted as beauty in the culture in a country that is indigenous with dark-skinned people.
Yeah.
So it was this weird keeping the chains of white supremacy upon yourself.
My mom was born and raised here, but I remember even growing up, she'd be like, if we're on vacation or we're in the sun, go sit in the shade. Like, you're in the sun too long. You guys are getting too dark. Like, and then I never wanted to get dark, but there's nothing wrong with being golden after the summer. But, like, you know, her mindset too is, I don't want to go in the sun. I'm going to stay in the shade. I don't want to get dark.
And
I'm
it's
getting too dark.
Very interesting you say that, because though now there's this desire, there has been this desire to become more white within the cultures in India, in places in Western civilizations now, having a golden tan is a status symbol, because it might mean you could go to travel to tropical places and get a tan. So so weirdly enough, now my caramel skin has once again become desired.
The in thing to do.
Exactly.
The in thing to have.
Exactly.
We're talking about racism within our own community, and if you want to weigh in, our number, as you know, is 604-280-1200 and 604-299-8863. We've got Om Arora in the program, and Maya has also joined us. So do give us a call. Spice Radio, Radio Room, Jham Sun Rhe Hain, Gapshap Ka Program Hai. Aur Gapshap Mein Aaj Hamare Saath Om Arora Hai, Aur Hum Baat Kar Rahe Hain Racism Ki. So, you know, it was very interesting when you and I were talking off the air and you mentioned a couple of things that I hadn't even heard about. In 1930s.
Yes.
Can you relate that story? Because I think many people will find it very interesting. And a lot of things will come out of that.
For sure. So if people understand, back in the 30s, we were still, you know, going under the belief that there was the Aryan civilization from Central Asia that migrated towards northern India, met with the indigenous Dravidians of India, who were darker skinned than the Central Asian Aryans. And, you know, we created what was known as the Indus Valley Civilization and what most of Indians today have that genetic makeup of. And in the 20s and 30s, as a lot of Asians were doing hard labor work in America, they were not allowed to gain citizenship.
Right.
So there was a few cases, one specific. The first one of Bhagat Singh Tind, who was actually the first soldier to wear a turban, American soldier to wear a turban.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a big thing for him as well. However, he went into court and he claimed that he was white because he was a lighter skinned Indian. And it was proof that he was from that Central Aryan, Asian Aryan ancestry that colonized India. So he was just like the white people, a colonizer. And pretty much in this, once again, he was agreeing that he will never be as white as the white judge who might have been proceeding his case, but he was willing to accept that white supremacy as long as he was not on the bottom rung of the ladder. So pretty much was saying, oh, I'm not like these Latin communities or Latin people. I'm not like these African people, African Americans. I'm actually white. I'm just like you. So I think people fail to realize that what by doing that, though it was a you know, desire to just get, you know, the same rights as the occupy or the, you know, the people who have the power, they were just trampling on, you know, their own people who look just like them. And it realistically created a lot of internalized racism. There was a lot of Indian people who started to believe that they were actually white and they were trying to shed themselves of their Indianness. And it became superstitious. You heard of a lot of men starting to drink coconut water so that their child would come out fair-skinned or do some sort of, you know, put haldi all over them and hope that their child would come out fair-skinned. And in their head, they might have been thinking, you know, I just want my child to have a better life. And white privilege does exist, so they would maybe have some privileges by being white. But what that parent may not realize is they're playing into the racism by literally trying to not have a child be born with dark skin. They're playing into it. They're keeping the chains of colonialism on them. They're accepting that white is better and that dark is worse by playing into that. Even if their intention may be, I just want my child to have a good life.
Good life.
You know, yeah. I know that, oh, my...
But there are different ways of attaining it.
Exactly. It's to change that mindset. Mm. It's to change. You can be that change in there. And I'm unfortunately using a quote of a person, Gandhi, who I personally think also did a lot of damage in terms of colorism within India. Because as the British colonizations were occurring, a lot of higher caste, you know, lighter skinned Indians were like agreeing that they were better than darker skinned people just so that they can have some sort of power, some sort of rights over another group of people. And I think that was really dangerous. I think people started to play into the fact that they were white or wanted to be white, shedding their Indianness. I realized this actually growing up my whole life. Until I was 15 or 16, I didn't care for India. I didn't read about it. I didn't care about my culture as much. I spoke Hindi. I, you know, watched Bollywood movies. It was very surface level. I didn't actually have any care for India. In fact, I used to openly up until I was maybe 13, 14, be like, I'm happy. I'm Canadian. I'm not Indian. I'm Canadian. I'm pretty much taking that Indianness away from me. Mm. I had that privilege of being a little bit lighter skin that I could play into it as well. And this was partially because throughout my whole life growing up, pop culture and everything had told me that India was this poor, dirty country. And that's where I was from. And I didn't want to be associated with being poor or dirty. It wasn't until I was 13, 14 years old, I realized that I was being fed lies. It was that point I also realized that I had not really been able to feel attraction for darker skinned people as much because I hated myself. I hated my own skin. I wanted to be whiter. I didn't even realize it was subconscious within my brain. It wasn't until that point when I realized it,
bulb went on.
Exactly, yeah. Unlearned it, that I was able to stop making those associations. So at that point, it realized to me the importance where, though I know my grandparents may not have had any bad intention when they used the words gora or kala in describing beauty, but it did have an impact. Your automatic associations with these things would automatically become good or bad with gora and kala, white or black, and you don't want to have these immediate associations in your head. There's a beautiful book called Blink by Malcolm Gladwell, in which he explains that almost 85 to 90% of all the things we do is decided on within a split second, within a blink of an eye. Those decisions are already made up in our head through all sorts of preconceived ideas from our whole life. Yes. So even in the moment when a cop is making the decision if he needs to fire that weapon or not fire that weapon, if that cop throughout his whole life has heard these associations of kala, bad, gora, white, good, all these things so often, that affects it. So these types of things you may not realize, even if your intention is not to be racist, may have an effect on your everyday interaction, how you judge and perceive people the immediate second that you see them. It's already been laid out, and we know that. People, a lot of people who are not Indian, automatically associate Indians with some sort of poverty or dirtiness because that is what they have been seen throughout all of culture, throughout all of entertainment and media more than anything else. It wasn't until, I would say, 60s where the model minority myth or model minority theory or idea became a thing, but it's actually a myth. So the model minority idea was pretty much that Indians were the best immigrants you could have. And though that's a lovely thing to say, people didn't realize how that also actually played into colorism.
Of course it did.
So there was many Indians who came in America and they realized, you know, I'm not going to be respected amongst a lot of my peers because I'm not white. So the only way they felt at that moment was to get material wealth, become an engineer, become a doctor. They would do that. And then a lot of that became a very common thing. You had a lot of these Indian families, Indian American families, moving into the suburbs. Their kids were going to the same schools that these white families were going from. They were moving out of communities that were more dominated with Latin and African communities. And this model minority myth started creating this belief amongst a lot of Indians that they're not like these other colored people, we're the better colored people. And it truly did play into that. And you see that amongst communities now, even in America, even in Canada, where a lot of Indians feel like, oh, we're a different sort of colored people. We're not like them. We're better than them.
We're the IT gurus.
Exactly. We're the model minority. We're the types of people you want to have. And that's a very, very dangerous thing. It creates a lot of anti-blackness within our culture. And we see that even domestically within India, with a lot of issues that are occurring now. I think it's absolutely beautiful that currently in India we have a rise of students, international students coming in. I think that's a sign that your country is progressing in a great direction if there's students from around the world who want to come and study at the great universities you have. A big influx of that has been African students. There's been a lot of African students studying in India for all the great programs they have there, but there's been an increase rise in this racism against these Africans in India. And I'm reading these stories as I was doing my research for this episode, and it was very interesting to hear how many of them even said that they were being called racist things by people who were maybe just a shade, a tiny bit of a shade lighter than them. And there was so many people who finally felt that I had been oppressed because of my skin color, so I'm going to now oppress others for their skin color. And we know that. Hurt people hurt people. So people didn't realize that they play into it, these damages, and how they're affecting people domestically within India, how the communities internationally and our diaspora is affected by this colorism, how it's within us, how we've been taught to hate ourselves to some degree. And we have to learn to take that out.
We have to learn to unlearn that.
Exactly, exactly.
And it takes a long time to do
very,
that.
Very, very long.
And I think, as we were mentioning, I think it's in our DNA to a certain extent to sort of hate somebody or because of their color or their religion. And I can get over the BMW part.
Yes. I think the self-hate comment that you said, that it's inherent within us, is important. And I mean, this is a little dark, but it is very true that during the colonizations, both Mughal and British, there was a very, very high amount of sexual assault occurring. And murder, of course. I don't think people realize that trauma is generational. So if you had to watch someone being sexually assaulted or murdered, especially under the pretense that these people were doing it because they were greater, because of their skin color than you, that trauma is generational. You will then, in moments of fear, maybe even to not be sexually assaulted or murdered, agree to this, play into this, to the point where you will literally agree so hard because you don't want to be sexually assaulted that you are worse than this person. Anything to save yourself. That energy can be generational. You could be born, that could have been something that happened to your great-grandparent and it was never properly dealt with or fixed, and that energy passed down. And a few generations later, you realize, like, why do I not like my skin color? Obviously, it's the circumstances from the current world is not fully not racist, but also you may not realize that just a few generations ago, there might have been people who were murdered and raped for not being the same skin color as you. And just because of that, that creates this self-hate within us. So it is very much so deep, and it is very much so intrinsic to some degree within us. We have to unlearn it. We have to look at it. We have to look at ourselves and ask, why do we feel this way?
We're talking about racism at its deepest level, and you can also be a part of it if you want to. We're going to take a short commercial break, and we'll be right back with Om Arora. Vice Radio or Radio Ranjam, sun rahe hain aap ka Shab ka program hai, aur aaj hamare saath Om Arora hai, and we're talking about racism. Racism can be, found everywhere. And I always have believed that our own community is very racist. I mean, you know, and this is very recent. It's not in our DNA. But when I was living here in the 80s, it was very apparent to me that I was different than all the people who were living here, who mm-hmm. had come here earlier. Majority of the people who have come to Canada are from the province of Punjab.
Yeah.
Although I speak Punjabi as well, and I'm a Punjabi too, but I'm not Sikh. So the religious racism was so rampant after the 80s that it made people just be quiet and be invisible and not be seen at all. And because you're not a Sikh, you are maybe a Hindu or a Muslim or an Ismaili, you know, you're not a Sikh. So mm-hmm. you won't be in that category. So it is sad that the people who are oppressed, when they have the opportunity of eradicating all that oppression, become oppressors themselves.
Yes, yes, most definitely. Like I said earlier, hurt people hurt people.
Yeah.
And that is common in all forms of hurting, not just in racism. Because it's very difficult. If you have been wronged or hurt, you may at one point, if you have not fully understood why or how that occurred, you can start to blame the world so heavily that you decide to revenge on it, right? In the same manner, right? That energy, that negative that was happened to you, you feel that it's the same, you could do the same now. It's justified.
You're just taking, yes, justification.
Exactly. I think beyond that, I think it's dangerous is that a lot of, in a daily life way, what people don't realize is that we're like crabs in a bucket, right? So we're all just trying to climb out and we're stepping on each other.
Yeah.
In a lot of these cases, people may not realize that by doing that, you're upholding that bucket. Like there's a way to just topple it over completely by not playing into it. If all the crabs stop trying to fight out to some degree, it's a bad analogy in that regard. But what I'm trying to say is that when a lot of Indians continued to play into their whiteness and the fact that they weren't as dark-skinned, the lighter-skinned Indians at least, they were just upholding the same amount of racism towards darker skinned people, which is unfortunately something that people don't realize has a different effect because more often so higher caste people are able to travel across the world and then have their diasporas throughout the rest of the world more often than lower caste individuals.
Well, you know, and the other thing is that doing a class system is inhumane.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the right thing to do. So when you are already dividing people according to their complexion, according to their religion, I think it makes a huge impact on the person that is receiving it, on the receiving end, right? Over here, and I think when people leave their homeland and come here to another country, not even Canada, I mean, you know, people have left India and gone to Africa. Many people lived in Africa, Fiji for that matter, right? But the Fiji ones were taken as indentured laborers.
Yes.
And they were forced to marry one another, whether they were Hindu or Muslim or Sikh. And so whosoever was the stronger person is the one who dominated the partner.
Yeah.
And religion was, that's the way religion was divided.
Yeah.
Having said that, it's again game of power. Power in physical power, mental power, and power in any other way that gives you an opportunity to be racist.
Yes. Yes.
So people have to look at it, examine themselves. I always say Indians are the most discriminating people on the face of this earth.
It's to the point where there's a ingrained desire of validation within us. And unfortunately, that was ingrained through fear.
Mm-hmm.
And that fear was inflicted upon us through those with light skin. And therefore, that validation is still being desired from that same power. So I think that our entertainment industry in India, our Bollywood, you know, you look at, just look at the list of all the Bollywood, the most famous Bollywood actresses that have been given the most amount of roles and the most amount of famousness. There could be a lot of actresses, in my opinion, who they didn't even know how to act, but because they were the most fair-skinned Indian they could find, that they're going to be a star. And that's what was being promoted, and it still realistically is. It's very, very normalized. We don't question it at all in terms of celebrities will even go out and speak against, you know, colorism, but then be promoting the fairness screams. So it's this weird acceptance to it, you know, we're okay with it because we realize that we're not the lowest on the hierarchy.
Well, India has been independent from outside rule for the past 75, 76 years now.
Yes.
And if you consider a generation to be 25 years, we've passed three generations.
Yes, yeah.
So how long will it take, one wonders, for India to feel proud of who they are and what they are, and go back to the Varan system, which was, you know, you are, you be proud of what you're doing. And there is no hierarchy there.
Yeah. I'd like to believe it's sooner rather than later. I'd like to believe that by the end of my lifetime, we'll be getting closer and closer towards it. If you are aware of the shifts of culture, let's say, in the metropolises of India, you see that a lot of this Westernized culture is being promoted and desired by a lot of youngsters in India.
Well, you were there just recently,
exactly,
right? And you felt that the Indian teenagers living there, or young people your age living there, were more Westernized than you were.
Yes, which is funny because now when you look at the Western women magazines, you know, there will be like veganism and spirituality. And, and then you start to read all these things that are in them, and they're all just a bunch of stuff from that are existing within Hinduism and existing within the Indian cultures very, very heavily. So if there is going to continue to follow this desire to be Westernized, there will come a point where they will arrive upon the spiritual Western woman, or the Indian Western woman. And I think that will then maybe reset the clock a little bit to some degree. And I think we're there sooner rather than later because, you know, like I said, as many criticisms and as much as this is an issue, I just do see that in the past 75 years as a whole, as a culture, I do think we have progressed. I don't think that we have regressed.
I think India has progressed
exactly
a lot.
So I do think it is...
But the
feeling
of being proud Indian is very important.
Yes.
The feeling of being... So where does that leave us who have our heritage is Indian, but we are Canadian? So that's where all of us have got to sit in and think, what do we want to do? I feel that we want to respect the culture we come from and promote that.
Mm-hmm.
Good things out of that culture.
Yes.
And take the best out of this country and promote that as well.
Yes.
And live here, but not fight the battles of the country you've left.
Yes.
Because the day you leave that country, the day you left your country, and I'm saying this again emphatically, the day you left your country, you were a traitor to that country because you couldn't live there and fight the battles of that country.
Mm-hmm.
And the day you sit here and use the water and the electricity and the good life and good clean air of this country and fight the battles of the country that you left, you are a traitor for this country.
For sure.
Because you are not fighting the battles of this country.
Yeah. No.
So be proud of being a Canadian. You've chosen this land.
For sure. Yeah.
So be a proud Canadian.
I think that it will be interesting. I do think it will be different amongst those who are living in India as Indians and those the diaspora around the world. I think that's partially because we're seeing more of a, you know, as much as I'm not for religious nationalism within the country, I think there's a great beauty in the rise of pride within your own culture to some degree.
No, of course, religion has got nothing to do with it.
Exactly.
Religion should never have anything
exactly,
to do with it.
Yeah.
It's your personal, private feeling.
Yeah.
You want to be, no matter who you want to be.
Yes.
You know, you be that within yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But your entire persona has got to be in line, in the same wavelength as you are living in the country that you've chosen.
Yes. And I think that'll be interesting for diasporas as we move forward, because I think that it will be long before we have, you know, the same amount of caste levels, let's say, around the world in diaspora. And you will always have more lighter-skinned Indians outside of India living. So yeah. That will always have some sort of impact to some degree. I think it's important within your own community as, living abroad Indians to look back into yourself and how you can then, if you're not domestic, take pride in yourself, but not play into any form of colorism.
Do an experiment, take dark-skinned Indians and put them in a place where there is no sun. In 3-4 generations, their children will be totally, fair-skinned.
Exactly, yeah.
So what has color got to do with it?
No, for sure, 100%. I think it's very, very interesting that people will just put all sorts of, judgments, all sorts of preconceived ideas just on a shade of complexion.
Let's take a short break and come back to more thought-provoking statements from Om Arora. Spice Radio, Radio Rim Jim Sundri, Kapshapka program hai. Om aaj hamare saath hai, and we're talking about racism. Har tarah ka racism, chahe wo rang ko leke ho, chahe wo jaat ko leke ho, ya aapki zaban ko leke ho, aapki bhasha ko leke ho, har tarah ke racism ko humne jagah de rakhi hai apni zindagi mein. To isse kaise chutkara paya ja sakta hai? What can one do?
So I think simple things, like we've already mentioned a few times, even if you don't feel your intention with the language when you're saying words like gora, kala, kala kaluta, even if
kali kaluti, bengan luti, I just popped in my head.
But that's what I'm saying. There's rhymes for this. Yes. There's so much normal. There's, to us, we're thinking, oh, that's just normal. Even the person knows we're not being racist if I'm talking to them. That's the problem right there, is that we are so normalized with it that even the words for us, we don't even think of it that have an impact. But they do truly have an impact.
Yeah.
So one of the ways is right there is to undo it. Realize the language you use and how that might actually impact things, especially for those who are in the diaspora. Like a kid growing up like me, I was automatically going to do the translation in my head. I always did whatever someone said to me. It was sometimes very funny because my mom would say something and I would do a direct translation. It would make absolutely no sense
whatsoever.
However, it still had some sort of impact. You still thought of it in a certain way. Those word associations are very, very, very important in your brain, because what ends up happening is you'll see a lot, there'll be a family, they'll be like, oh, you have darker skin friends, don't hang out with them. For what reason? You're already making these preconceived notions, you're already creating these, I've heard a lot from other families who they don't want their children to be marrying someone who's darker skinned. They don't want their kids to be hanging out with someone who's darker skinned. And these are all based off these 1-second preconceived notions that you made, and that language plays into that. It adds into that, and it's very, very dangerous. So that's like probably one of the first things you can do is realistically just looking at your own language that you might use and how some of it is racially charged. Second thing is obviously that critical thinking and looking back at your own history. Realizing that there is this inherent desire for validation that exists within us and where it comes from. Why is it that we feel that it's okay to put others down as long as well as accept us not being as great at others as long as we get some sort of benefits out of it or something out of it? That tolerance with just the very bare minimum, which usually isn't even the bare minimum. The bare minimum should be no racism, no colorism, no bigotry. But, there's this weird acceptance with even just like the bare minimum of, okay, if you're not going to be, we'll be racist to others if you're not racist to us. That's just a very weird concept that everyone and a lot of people in India are very okay with.
It brings me to a beautiful story that I heard long time ago.
Yeah.
It was Prabhu Padupadai.
Okay.
I think he's the guy who was responsible for starting the Hare Krishna movement.
Okay.
So he started translating Gita into English.
Yeah.
And someone asked him, why are you doing that? He said, so if the non-Indians start reading it, then the Indians will start reading it too. Because gurus have done it.
Yes.
So it must be the good thing to do.
Yeah.
Your own Bhagavad Gita.
Yes.
I was floored.
Yes. No, you're totally right by that. Also, if people do read those texts, they will come to realize that many of our deities were, described as dark as the night sky.
Of course.
So many of the same, people who are very colorist will go and be religious and not realize that the people they're praying to, those deities were darker than them, as dark as the darkest person in the world. So we
have a young artist in our own community. She is the daughter of our speaker of the house, Raj Chauhan's daughter, Anu yes. Chauhan, who is a beautiful artist. And she painted some beautiful Lakshmi and Durga images. And I asked her, I said, would you make mine darker?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the real Indian ones. And she did. And they're so beautiful. Amazing.
Yeah.
And she, from that day onwards, I think has started doing that.
Yeah.
And her artwork looks just out of this world.
I believe it. That's another thing, though. I think people stop trying to filter your face white. Yeah. Don't do it. It's a form of self-hatred. You might not even realize it.
Yeah.
You, if your beauty standard sees fairer as more beautiful right there and then, you are not realizing that you're playing into the racism. Even if you're like, I have so many friends that are dark skinned, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you feel for every way, shape, or form that you are not racist. But then you look in the mirror and you're like, I wish I was kind of like, I'm looking a little dark today. Or, I'm going to put, when I'm doing my editing and my photos before I post on Instagram, I'm going to make the filter brightness up a little bit. And it subconsciously plays into this. You might not even realize what you're doing.
Yeah. Or, when you're saying, when people come up and say to you, I don't like that person. Majority of my friends are Indian.
Yeah.
But I don't like that Indian.
Yeah.
Majority of my friends are Indian.
Yeah.
What does that mean? But I don't like that.
Well, people just use that as a way to get off usually the bigotry within that. And I think it's very funny you bring that up. I mean, a little bit off topic, but it's very funny because, as there's been a rise of bigotry and racism against Indians in Canada, because we have obviously a great influx of people coming into the country, people will think it's because I've grown up my whole life here and I'm very integrated into Canadian society, people will say things like that to me. They'll say, they'll say things about Indians, but be like, oh, you're not like, you're not one of those Indians. And I completely disagree with that. I'm like, what does that, explain what you mean by that. You mean I'm not like those Indians because I'm white to you? That's what I'm saying. I have white privilege and, people, I'm an Indian with white privilege. You're thinking, how does that exist? Because there's levels of severity of where that white privilege exists in relation to others, So it's, yes, of course, if I'm walking or down the street and it's all, just fully white Canadians, then I'm not going to have that privilege. But if I'm in India, I do have white privilege, even as an Indian, just being lighter skinned. But I'm not white. So it's the concept of whiteness, actually, just to bring back that Bhagat Singh Tind case, he was not granted citizenship because he claimed that scientifically, I'm a Caucasian because I'm from the Caucasus area. That was a moment in which they denied it. They said, though you may be scientifically correct, in the moment, that's what they believed, though you may be scientifically correct, the law here does not say that Caucasian people can't be citizens. It says that non-white people. So the concept of whiteness then and there was becoming more and more understanding and codified into law. It wasn't about where in the world you're from. It was about, strictly about the concept of whiteness in that moment.
Isn't that just disgusting?
Very disgusting.
That was a very disgusting topic.
I agree. But it's important. It's very important.
Very important.
It runs rampant in our communities.
Yeah.
It's not by any means short. It's very unfortunate how many South Asian parents here at events, at gatherings of all sorts, you hear things that they do not realize is realistically very, very racist. And they'll play into it. They'll teach their kids this. Their kids will grow up and they'll kind of feel that way as well. And I never felt that way because I was never taught that way.
Yeah.
So I realized right there and then the difference. My parents never, ever, even in that language, which I was able to call them out about it when I was 13 or 14 and understood it. And they understood it from my perspective and they realized like, that does play into racism by using these words.
Right.
However, growing up my whole life and being told, bring anyone from any religion or any skin color home, as long as they're a good person, we don't really care.
Right.
That really shaped who the manner in which I dictated my life, the relationships I built, and the way I treated people. And unfortunately, way too much what you'll see in our cultures here, especially, they'll be like, do not date outside of your race, or especially do not go with someone who's dark skinned.
Very sad.
Very, very sad. Like I said, and they'll say that to people who are as, once again, dark as the indigenous people of India. The indigenous Dravidian people of India are completely dark skinned people, much, much darker than me, much darker than Shushma. And that's who we come from. So there's no need to hate ourselves.
No need to hate the color.
Yes, the color or ourselves, for sure.
With that, we come to the end of our show. As always, a very interesting program. So thank you for that. And we'll see you next month.
Yes.
And in the meantime, think about it, ponder over it, and see how you can change your own viewpoint. And
yes,
the viewpoint of your children.
Yes.
And your future generations. Stay tuned for the Drive Home Grind with DJ Flight and Maya right here on Spice Radio. And it's going to be on Rim Gym as well. We'll see you tomorrow.